Yes, hi everyone, and welcome to a post-Socceroos edition of the Fox Football Podcast, the extra time version of that. David Weiner here from foxsports.com.au with you, joined by Kate Cohen as we look back at the first installment of Bert van Marwijk's Socceroos tenure and look ahead about what we're going to be waiting and watching and looking for from our Socceroos as we count down to the next squad and the next batch of friendlies before the World Cup. Kate, welcome.
Thank you.
We sat there Saturday morning, very concerned, watching what was coming through our screens on Oslo. Saw some improvement against Colombia, but I think a scoreline that probably papered over a couple of cracks. How were you feeling once the cold light of day had settled in?
Now my sleeping patterns have the potential to go back to normal. I'm probably a little bit more calm and considered, but yeah, that Norway game, I think it was a shock to the system for everyone, really, both in terms of the style of football that we saw, but mainly the weaknesses that were exposed, albeit with the fact that he had just 4 days to train with them. That's obviously going to be the main mitigating factor with anything that we discuss. But yeah, improvements from the Colombia game, but only slight. And on another day,
Our mate up front,
who Boza declared very boldly as the man of the match for the Socceroos, which in some situations it's not the silliest thing to make. He missed seven golden opportunities. On another day, that's a 3 or 4 nil result against the Socceroos, and the discussion is very different once again. But improvements from that first game to the Colombia game.
It was it's rare to get a 2 minute highlight package out of an opposition player on the Fox Sports website, but he did provide that for us. Look, I think we sort of saw an attempt to try and buy in from the players from one game to the next. They're obviously trying to cram for this exam in a way, which is kind of the way I've sort of been looking at it. But what we all are aware of now is the polar opposites that we've got. We suspected it, we speculated it, we hypothesized over it. We've now seen it with our
own eyes. We probably also questioned it a little bit, thinking, are we just being tainted by that 2010 World Cup that the final is what we remember, but do we really remember what happened in the games leading up to that? So there was always that element, speaking for myself, of we know this is the reputation that is attached, and at that time, all we could take him on is what he was saying. And what he was saying was he prefers a possession-based game, he likes to press, and he likes to be proactive because the game is about that, and the spaces are less, which means you need to be proactive and then quick in transition. So he was saying the right things, but there was always the big caveat attached where he said, but I like to win. And now what we're seeing is that he believes the only way the Socceroos can win is by conceding possession, conceding space, retreating, and ultimately trying to soak up pressure, frustrate the opposition, and then hit teams on the counter-attack. I'm sure we'll at some point get into a broader discussion about what that means, but in terms of early impressions, we now know what Bert van Marwijk stands for and the direction that the Socceroos will be heading into Russia.
Yeah, in terms of what we learnt, we're going to do it through the prism of the power rankings, because it lets us to go step by step through the various players that we saw and what impressions van Marwijk might be able to take out of him. But, you know, you talk about first impressions. We turned to each other after literally 2 minutes, 25 seconds of the very first game against Norway and went, yep, there's the retreat. There's the press is
players gone. Running backwards.
There it is, and it didn't work against the direct, very rudimentary style of Norway. But the signs were there, and now Socceroos fans, we will talk about it a bit later. But you park the whole philosophical discussion and just hope the come Russia,
we're ready.
It worked, and we're ready. We come to the power rankings. We're going to go through. We're going to start off by literally going from 1 to 10 because it allows us to segue into all the different areas. And what's absolutely fascinating in the way we put this together this time is the rocket. If you're talking about the music charts, we go, you know, someone's gone up with a bullet. We have a new number one in our rankings. And the amazing thing about this is it's come through doing absolutely nothing.
Have we ever had this before? Have we ever had a player not play a minute and jump to the top of our list?
I don't think so. And I think it's the case of distance makes the heart go fonder, or whatever the equivalent saying is or cliche is. And I truly believe that Trent Sainsbury has become the most indispensable soccer.
Absolutely. First name on the team sheet.
Heading into Russia, because we have to hope he gets on the field with Grasshoppers, get some, you know what? Regular minutes for Trent isn't even the biggest issue, because he's actually done very well for the Socceroos.
Yeah, and we saw it with the with the Syria and Honduras games where he was carrying himself through injury, and then that was the opportunity for him to go through surgery. So he hasn't played for a long time, but he's now that number one player that we need fit just purely we based on what we've seen.
We need him injury free, and we need him on the park. And he's the other defender we have in our top 10 is at number 9 is Matt German, who's also in the top 10 of this list for the first time because, I mean, he just went a it was just an exceptional debutant in his in those playoffs at the end of last year, and he's now needs to be in that centre of defence with Sainsbury. That comes from the fact that Van Marwijk references himself when he picked his team. We've gone away from the three at the back. We've got our four at the back. It was meant to cure everything. And what we saw is there are still fundamental problems in the way the team sets up. But Milligan and Jegenek together, the assessment there is, there's two assessments out of that. One is that if Milligan has got all his time over 180 minutes defence, that he's probably not being looked at in that number six role for the Socceroos going forward. So that's where he's got to focus on getting his minutes. Milos Deganek, is he a convincing factor to be guaranteed in this 23? Bailey Wright, who has played all his minutes at centre-back for the Socceroos, used it right-back and wasn't seen in the next game. So mixed messages and confused outcomes from that first game as far as I see with defence, and no one that really put their hand up to feel great about the next selection.
Yeah, absolutely, and particularly given what we'd seen before. So if we use Deganek as an example, under Postecoglou in the Greece games, he was used at right fullback. Yep. And for a period there when we were playing with four at the back, the main question was, is Milos Deganek going to be the player that takes on this position? That would have solved a lot of questions that Postecoglou had. And ultimately, he decided right back wasn't an adequate fix for a question, a position with a question mark on it. He then was playing in the center of defense with Bailey Wright or Trent Sainsbury or Matt Yerman, who came in Spiranovic. Yep. There were so many different options that we've seen come and go. But then to see that when Van Marwijk reverted to the back four, he opted for Bailey Wright to play there. We know Bailey Wright plays there for Bristol City in the Championship, but playing in the Championship at right fullback is very different to playing at the World Cup at right fullback. And we saw against Norway that he was exposed badly and he was hooked very, very early in that second half. The interesting thing that I saw was that he opted not to put Deganek to right fullback, but Milligan, which perhaps means that he sees something positive in Deganek at centre back, which then gives you question marks over whether it will be Yerman, because Deganek was playing as the left-sided central defender. But I mean, as we've gone through these power rankings, and I think to put Matt Yerman in at number 9 is a pretty safe bet, just purely because of the balance that he offers with his left foot. He's also got that hard man mentality. You know, the big moment that stands out from his Sydney FC career is that when he had the split, his head was split open, he goes off, gets staples, bandage, back on, and heads the ball 3 times in a row within 30 seconds. There's that element of Matt Yerman that would really suit what Bert van Marwijk wants. Add in the balance of him being a left-sided player. That's looking like, you know, fingers crossed there are no injuries and that they go into the World Cup fully fit, but that looks like that is all but a lock for our central defensive pairing.
Yeah, I agree. And a player that didn't get any minutes in that camp was Josh Belante, a player that you thought could be a utility at right back. And I asked, I think in our preview, is Berlante face basically Milligan 2.0? Is it one of them that goes? And perhaps it is. And at the moment, Milligan has that position where he's probably the third, maybe even fourth option at number six and no longer a guarantee there, where he was almost, is it, you know, him or Jedinak under Postecoglou for a while. And now we've seen he could be deployed as a utility across the back line again in a throwback to his previous years. So we'll get to a little bit lower down the rankings for the rest of the back line, but you get the sense, given it wasn't a convincing performance, that there could still be someone yet that we didn't see in that 26 that could come in as that third, fourth, either centre-back or second right-back going forward. But Aziz Bajic, who comes in at number 10 on our list, well, he got, I don't know if it was 180 minutes, but he was certainly starting both games. And James Meredith, who was in the squad, didn't get that Josh Risden minutes. Yeah. He didn't get that look in the second game. So can we read into that? You probably can, I would suspect, because this time Alex Gersbach didn't get a look in, but he was knocking on the door. And as he gets more comfortable in France, perhaps that's a late run he can make into the squad as well. I think in terms of defenders, Sainsbury, number one, Yerman, number 9, and we've got Aziz Beige at number 10. He has come such a long way in the last year from a player.
It wasn't that long ago he was an international outcast, and you didn't get a look in because you had
Brad
Davidson,
Smith.
You had Smith, you had Gersbach just edging ahead of him. But yeah, out of nowhere, Aziz Beige playing regularly with Bursaspor. And he's been solid for the period of time that he returned into that wing-back position. Mm. And now the fact that he's played 2 full games against Norway and Colombia at the expense of Meredith getting any kind of exposure to those matches suggests that perhaps Van Marwijk has penciled him in as his long-term left fullback option.
Absolutely. Now, number 2. So Sainsbury at number 1. Number 2, we've got Matt Leckie, who has been a number 1 at times for when he was in ridiculous form for Hertha Berlin and when he was just Australia's sharpest outlet. I didn't think he was at his best or most comfortable or most confident in either of these two games. He was in his favoured number 7 position. Interestingly, he was also starting both games. Well, we know what Leckie can do. It's not like he was auditioning or anything like that. I think he gets his number 2 position. We know his quality. We know he's got rare pace. We know he is a player who can get to the byline. He now has goals in him. But he's also as high as number 2 because of what's beneath him.
Mm-hmm.
And that he is clearly now one of the first names on the team sheet, period.
Mm, absolutely. And not just the options and the alternatives underneath Leckie, but also looking at the style of play that Van Marwijk has shown that he wants to play. And that the discussion of we noticed in the first 2.5 minutes that the Socceroos would retreat, by 5 minutes, we had noticed that he didn't want his fullbacks advancing at all. Mm. And they were playing very, very flat in build-up, which meant that, and could mean that going forward, if that's a pattern that continues, that the Socceroos would then need to get their width and their attacking outlet through their wingers and their wingers alone. There would be no more of what we have seen with Postecoglou when he did play a back four of a central midfielder rotating out into a wide area, which then would allow the fullback to move high up the field and a winger to come into the little pockets of space between the lines to receive and face forward. Mm. That would be no longer if the fullbacks stay so deep. And also the fact that our 2 number sixes, our 2 holding midfielders, consistently stay
very
central
static
on the same line with not a lot of cut and thrust, not a lot of forward, up and back movement, and not a lot of side to side movement. They're very central, very static, although Luongo did show that that was different.
I wonder if that was teething problems or if that's the message. And that's, I guess, the lessons
we'll
that
see,
we're looking
won't
at.
We?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
But with that in mind, that stands out as where Leckie, with his raw pace, with his ability to hug the touchline and get in behind and beat players one-on-one, not necessarily through technique, but just through his physical attributes. And he's very, very dangerous in those positions if you were to isolate him 1v1 out wide. That, to me, suggests that if this is the way, if what we've seen so far is the way that Van Marwijk wants to go going forward, particularly with the counter-attacking element as well, if we add that in, then Leckie is very far above the alternatives at right wing.
Yeah, Leckie needs to be at his best. If we're talking counter-attacking, if we're looking at also the fact is if we're playing a bit more direct and we're going to be so deep winning the ball, but we need those outlets to be available and accessible. It's funny you talk about the fullbacks being deeper, and that was where I sort of focused a little bit on that being stuck between eras, because it almost looked like half their weight was going, oh, I used to go here, and then half was like, well, I've got to take this instruction literally, and it'll be very interesting to see if they're able to iron out those, I guess, just different instructions from the coach over the next couple of months.
Absolutely.
Number 3 is another bolter with a rocket, and you know, our listeners here might think that, you know, what's going on? Why the massive shakeup? We'll get to the logic behind it in a second about the players that have dropped down a little bit on the list. But we've got Tommy Juric up at number 3. Now, Tommy came off the bench in the first game, and he started the second game and had a really good half chance. Physical presence up front. We know he's very comfortable now leading the line. Not to say that we think Tommy can go and score a bag full of goals at the World Cup or that we're guaranteed to get that out of him. But you look at this formation, the 4-2-3-1, Tommy Juric is the number 9.
Yes.
There's no question. He is the number 9 out and out. It is built around that. And in that sense, given, again, the depth behind him, straight in there. It's pretty
much hard to
talk too much more about that.
And I mean, when you look at it, the main question that might come up is, Andrew Dabu started the first game as the number 9. Why isn't he in consideration for that role? But you also then have to think that Juric was one of those players that arrived late into camp, so perhaps the Norway game came too quickly for him, plus Van Marwijk was looking ahead to what was to come in against Colombia. And what Juric showed on the field was that he has the physical presence to be able to trouble two central defenders. Mm. The ball is then able to be played up to him on the counter-attack, and he can link with forward runners. And he is still our most potent number nine option, if we exclude the, you know, the legend of Tim Cahill, where he can come off the bench and cause an impact potentially. Mm. We don't know if that still exists. Mm. We're yet to see that, considering his lack of game time for Millwall. But Juric as the number nine option, I think, again, that's another one where either right now or pretty soon Van Marwijk will realise that he pencils him in from the start when he's fit.
Mm. Mm. Now, the next group is a bit of a cluster, and I posed after the game on Wednesday that Bert van Marwijk, amongst his many headaches and problems to solve, has a Massimo Luongo-sized problem, because the Queen's Park Rangers midfielder, he's 25 years old now. I'm pretty sure that's his age now. And he's been in and out the side for a while, but from late last year, for club and country, has been really impressive. Mm. With both a balance of skill, smarts, work rate, and against Colombia, looked like the quickest to adapt in both games what was being asked of him. Holding that number six line, but also linking forward with Tom Rogic, and also breaking the lines. So, if Masluongo in this now quite rigid 4-2-3-1 makes it in, the question I posed in online last week was, do you admit your captain, Mile Jednak, as a number six? Do you admit your Premier League star, Aaron Moy, as a number six? Or do you admit your mercurial playmaker, Tommy Terrific from Celtic at number 10, when you would think, in theory, that a 4-2-3-1 formation is built there for him to flourish? What's the solution there? I should add, which is why we've got 4-5-6-7 being Jednak as the skipper, Tom Rogic as the number 10. You'd think he's locked in. And then Amoy and Luongo, 6 and 7, possibly vying out for one position.
And again, we speak about the right fullback conundrum, and this was a conundrum that Ange Postecoglou was not able to answer, and he tried many different ways. But I think with the 4-2-3-1 being the formation that we're going to use, who misses out from this? A potential alternative would be for Luongo to play as a narrow right winger. Mm. We've tried that with the national team before in about 2015. We tried that. It didn't work, because Luongo drifted into central areas and we didn't have an outlet offering width.
And we've now classified
that this is what Van Marwijk wants. Mm. He wants width and he wants pace and directness. So that option is off the cards, which leaves us only with one misses out. Based on what we've seen over the two games, Rogic made a positive impact in that first half against Colombia, where technically he was one of the players who you were able to play a ball into, and more times than not, he still had his fair share of turnovers, but more times than not, he was able to make that ball stick in a very, very frantic first half.
Amidst the chaos, that really Luongo to Rogic was the only sign of some sort of calmness in a really helter-skelter middle of the park. So, plus that moment of brilliance that he can bring you on the world stage, which we're not seeing regularly from him yet, but we know it's in his kit bag.
Yeah, and it's that X factor, that uncoachable element that is irreplaceable. And if you are going to go into a World Cup with your system being reactive and soaking up pressure and then playing on the counter-attack, to have him with space to drive into in midfield and also have hopefully a little bit of space to get past a man and then pass with the ball, that is a very potential key to a Socceroos success in Russia. If you just look at it, the alternative would be for Rogic to drop out and for Moy to play that number 10 role. Physically, he doesn't have that explosiveness, that pace, that power through the middle of the park. He does have the X factor with his passing range. But with Huddersfield, although he has played as a number 10, predominantly he plays as one of the two number sixes. And he is the person who drops deep to start attacks and build from the back. So I think if it's Rogic v Moy for the number 10, then it's Rogic that's ahead. And now the challenge becomes, as you posed, do you take your captain? Do you take your informed midfielder who knows the system and showed against Colombia that it suits him very much? Or do you take Moy? And considering the style of play that Van Marwijk will play, which is, again, reactive, he needs a destroyer. Mm. He can't have Moy next to Luongo, because you lose element of defensive as his main focus, which then it's means Yeganack's in there. And then Moyo Luwongo. And
it could be horses for courses.
It could be. We saw the Chile game, and it could be a situation that he's tested out Jackson Irvine, who's a little bit further down our list at number 13. He's tested Jackson Irvine out as that number 10. Maybe he sees the game. We need more energy. We go with Irvine. We need a little bit more technical ability. We go with Luwongo. We need more of a distributor. We go with Moy. So there's no certainty that any of these positions will be locked, but it leaves him and us with a huge headache.
Yeah, Luwongo has changed the course of the discussion.
Mm.
And Jedinak's fitness, Jedinak's performance in those crunch Honduras games is a marker to go back to go, you know, people might complain about his passing. They might complain about little things in the game like that, but he's just a leader of men in those big games at the World Cup. We absolutely need him.
And we need that beard. We need that beard out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fashionistas of the World Cup, I mean, Millet's going to be all over. he's going to be all over the best images of the World Cup with some of the things that he will do over there. The other thing is the 37% possession Australia kept against Colombia makes you look at it and go, does Van Marwijk need a Moy in that team? If it's not something that he is prioritising, that is one of Moy's major skill sets, is that metronomic ability to dictate the terms for whichever side he plays with. So I can't. It's an unfathomable thought, and I know everyone went berserk when Moy was dropped for that Syria game, for the start of that Syria game, but it's not unfathomable that we might be coming to a similar scenario.
And we've yet to see the best of Aaron Moy in a Socceroos shirt consistently, so yep. Definitely big question marks over him,
big
and
narrative.
It's a shootout between Moy Luwongo and Irvine if we use the Jedinak as the captain leader legend there in the middle of the park. Yeah.
Big narrative to follow over the next couple of months. Number 8 surprises me because we've had him as high as number 1, 2, and 3 and pretty much just put him in there and thought about the rest for the last few months, but it's Matty Ryan. And I've been surprised by Van Marwijk's rhetoric on this. I guess the goalkeeper is an easy symbolic position to go, this just proves that no one's safe. I mean, we've seen it as with Oliver Kahn and Jens Lehmann with Germany, and it changed the dressing room dynamic in a World
Cup. We saw it with Schwarzer and Kalatz for the 2006 World Cup.
Indeed, we did. Closer to home. A much more obvious example, I suppose. but
same World Cup.
But the Matt Ryan one where, you know, he's just been he's pretty much a flourishing with Brighton and Hove Albion and becoming a fan favourite over there. Van Marwijk keeps referencing the goalkeepers when we're talking about selection. Before the camp, he talked about the fact he wanted to see all three, and that was the only position he specified. And then during camp, he was asked straight out, does Brad Jones and Danny Vukovic getting minutes mean that they are as equal a chance of being number one as Matt Ryan? And in a stone-cold, one-word answer, he just said, yes. Move on. Next question. It's great to put the rest of the team on notice. I wonder how seriously he is considering Danny Vukovic or Brad Jones to be the number one usurping Matt Ryan. It'd be a big call.
It would be a huge call. And Matty Ryan will be all of a sudden thinking when the coach starts talking about everyone needs to be on the same page and I won't accept it if you're not. He's probably thinking, should I have played that fizz pass into Jedinak in the middle of the park when we were being pressed?
Yeah.
Which resulted in Norway's third goal. If you look at it, what Matty Ryan offers you is incredible pace and the ability to sweep up behind a high defensive line. He offers you phenomenal technical ability with both his left and his right feet, where he can pass short, he can break lines into midfield, he can clip balls up to the front line, he can hit diagonals, he can do everything on his left and on his right. He can also, if there's space and time to come, he can come for a cross and then a quick throw, quick distribution for counterattacks. So he has the raw attributes to be
a great shot stopper.
And a phenomenal shot stopper, of course, the bread and butter of a goalkeeper. Yeah. But does Van Marwijk want someone who is good with his feet, willing to play, willing to take risks for the reward of playing out, and also someone who, as we've seen with Brighton's struggles from set pieces and from their defending deep, he's not the best under a high ball. For a goalkeeper, he's only around that mid-180s, which can be considered short. Vukovic isn't much taller.
But Brad Jones is.
And Brad Jones is not great with his feet. He does look to play when it's on. But when it's not on, he's the first one to wave him up and give it a launch up the field. What does Van Marwijk want?
We are only reading between the lines. You know, unlike his predecessor, who we heard lots from and was able to start to read a little bit into, we can only read between the lines. But I get the sense he is giving Brad Jones every chance to be the number one for the Socceroos. I just get that feeling because he was one of the first names that was mentioned outside of...
He was probably the only name because we heard in the lead-up where Mille Jedinak did an interview with the Fox Sports website before the Socceroos camp assembled, and he made the admission of, I'm the captain, I haven't spoken to Bert, the new coach. Van Marwijk didn't say anything about Bolters and he didn't get drawn into speculation, but he goes on Dutch TV and says, I have had a conversation with Brad Jones and we've spoken about the potential of him returning from the Abyss, where he hadn't been involved. He'd played one game in 8 years against Ecuador and he only played that game because Langerak got sent off. And then there was nothing from him. Now he's back. He's the only player that Van Marwijk publicly spoke about besides the Tim Cahill question.
We're just speculating.
Yeah, but it's an interesting discussion point. And again, as you put there, the question, does Jones and Vukovic getting minutes mean that Ryan's not safe? Yes, he's not safe. He's not safe.
And to add, it's not the first time a coach has given all his goalkeeper minutes, but it's the rhetoric that's come with it. That just makes me think, well, he's either playing that game, which is, I'm going to put all the players on their toes, but just looking at the way the team sets up, Brad Jones had no qualms just chipping the balls downfield and getting the midfield to play off the second ball, play it safe. I just think there's something more in that. And I think that's one to watch. And I feel, to a certain extent, for Mitch Langerak, who tried to get to a couple of big clubs in big leagues, didn't quite work. A new manager's come in and at the wrong time, he's found himself fourth
in limbo.
Tier.
Yep.
Fourth tier. Even though he's playing in Japan, he's found himself with that fourth tier despite going through the whole qualifying campaign. So that's going to be a very curious one to watch because Vukovic, I think, is playing regularly and despite his minute of madness, ended up redeeming himself. So that was a fabulous story. But that's become a story to watch. Of a quick side note, great depth. You'd rather have the depth than not.
Oh, absolutely.
But we weren't expecting it. I think the last area we haven't talked on specifically, we talked about Matt Leckie in terms of providing the width, but the fact that we need those more advanced players, the 7 and 11, to provide that width brings this last part of the conversation into focus. And a player we actually didn't know...
Bolter alert.
We didn't know where to rank the person that kicks off this debate because, again, you're reading into it both ways. Was Andrew Nabu getting minutes 9, 11 and 7 a sign that he is where he is, that part of Bert van Marwijk's plans? Or was it the fact that you got a guy who is genuinely auditioning, a guy that has not been seen at this level, being given the chance to see what he's like when he's asked to sink or swim? And we don't know. I think Nabu looked pretty confident. I think it was a difficult doubleheader for him to really
He looked better
thrive.
Out wide in the Columbia Absolutely. Game than he did up yeah. front, leading
Absolutely.
The line against Norway.
Had a few... When we did get forward and did get wide, he whipped a couple of nice balls in and there was that lovely 1-2 on the edge of the area before he basically sliced a shot into the Craven Cottage stands. So there's two ways to look at it. Either way, he's genuinely in the mix. But is he ahead of your Robbie Cruises, of your Nikita Rukovic's, James Troisi's, alongside perhaps Petrados, who got man of the match in the first game? Did Van Marwijk see enough in the first game? Is that why he didn't give Petrados time in the second game? This is, I think, one of the more interesting selection dilemmas going forward, because if these two young stars who've got their position from their form with the Newcastle Jets do get in there, there's a couple of incumbents that are going to made their run at the wrong time.
Absolutely, and if Nabu and Petrados have impressed, the fact that they even got into the final 26-man squad at the expense of someone like a Jamie McLaren, who we've seen play for the Socceroos before.
And jumped an Arwa Mabil, even slightly different position, and Mustafa Amini, those types of guys who have been involved, Craig Goodwin, who have been in the squad before in attacking positions.
Yeah, and now we've got the situation where neither of them did their chances any harm.
No.
They were good. They did well. They made a good account for themselves. The games and perhaps the freshness of the new coach and the new way meant that they weren't able to best express themselves. They also come in without the cloud of what it was before.
True.
So there's always that element as well, that they're soaking in the messages that they are receiving fresh. But if Nabu and Petrados have edged their way into serious consideration, it's going to be one of Rukavica or Troisi who then misses out of the 23. if we work on the assumption that Robbie Cruz goes, which he still is.
Let's talk about Cruz for a second, because Cruz was, even when not playing at his club, when he was fit in the last 4 years, he was used. He's not everyone's favourite player, but he's a guy that can stretch defences. He's, along with, like, he just got that raw pace.
Intelligent forward runs. Yet
can have the propensity to tuck in, but has also been used at wing-back but for the Socceroos. But we talk about this with, I know you've got an interesting take on why Naboo might actually have nudged him in the pecking order, because you look at it and you go, if it was a case of Bert Van Marwijk not looking at the players that he sees as locks, well, then he wouldn't have played Lecky. So I look at Cruz getting two cameos and go, I think there's also a little bit in this as well.
It's a tricky one, because they even floated the Fox Sports team, floated this in the post game of, why didn't Robbie Cruz start either of the games? And no one knows an answer. Did he carry a niggle into camp and maybe perhaps his club had given him minutes restrictions based on the context of their season, knowing that it's a friendly, and maybe Bert Van Marwijk has seen enough, so he goes, okay, I'm only happy to use him for the minutes that you'd like to maintain that relationship with the club. But the fact that we're questioning, was he injured or did his club not want him to play minutes? That's because the only alternative is that Van Marwijk doesn't see him as his first choice left wing option, which, when you look at the 4-2-3-1 and you put all the names out on the table before we'd seen anything of what Bert Van Marwijk went with, we had the discussions again about the midfield and how do the pieces of the puzzle fit in, and we had the discussions about fullback and central defence, but it was Robbie Cruz, Matt Lecky, Rogic is the 10, and Juric is the 9. Robbie Cruz did not start a single game, and Andrew Naboo started both, and Dimi Petratis was man of the match in the first game. So, yeah, I think Robbie Cruz's position is certainly up for discussion, and I would state the claim that Naboo's gone ahead of him. Just based on, we can only go off what we've seen, and what we haven't seen is perhaps there was that niggle, but we don't know that. But what we do know is that Naboo started both games. Naboo made a good showing for himself, and Naboo offers something different to what Cruz does in that he is more direct, he is quicker, he looks to get in behind, and he looks to deliver. Whereas Cruz, what we've seen is when he plays on the left, he looks to drift in onto his right and act as a second number 10. And if we hypothesise that Van Marwijk wants explosive counter-attacking football, he wants extreme width, and he wants not a second number 10, which is where Robbie Cruz is best.
Interesting. Very interesting. So to round out a 23, we haven't got Cruz dropping out of the 23. We've actually got him at number 12. Jackson Irvine at 13. Josh Risden at 14. I mean, he's the first. He's arguably the purest.
And it's not convincing at number 14, is it?
He's the purest right-back we've got. Actually, we can throw in one there, because remind me to come back to Risden. We've got Cahill at 15. He's been the nominal number one for a long time, but really, Tim's in the squad, you'd suspect, but he's not starting.
So no, and again, Naboo at number 9 for the first game. There's something in that.
So we've got Milligan at 16, Degenek and Wright, 17 and 18, they've got the inside running. Whether they've convinced and they drop out, you can only go on the fact they've got the inside running. Vukovic, Jones, both obviously in there. And then that cluster of Petrarch, Rukavitsia, Meredith. I said, remind me about Risden, because what we haven't got there, right, is the squad balance. They're the players who probably, in terms of winners from the last two games, that's the hierarchy of them. But the Risden, Wright, Bajic thing on right and left, we haven't heard the last of that. I don't think you're going to get Petrados, Naboo, Rukavitsia, and Cruz all in the squad. There is another defender of some nature or two that are going to come in, and it could be at those guys' expenses. There's a name I'm going to throw right out of left field who I brought up when we did our first power rankings, I think, and I actually think, again, that it's not beyond the realms of impossibility. We've got Luke Wilkshire at 29.
He's moved up a long way.
Yeah, can there be a fairy tale there? Because if Bailey Wright's not going to work, you need to know what's going on at right back. If you can't take one in,
and if Jones is returning, well, that means that Van Marwijk is again opening up the full list of names, and forget the past, forget the regeneration of the national team, which was the step that Postecoglou went through, where he decided that he would rather a Langerak over a Jones, and he decided that he would rather younger fullback options to Wilkshire, and at the time that was a Franjic and McGowan. McGowan is injured, and Franjic hasn't been able to crack it for a number of years now. So Wilshere comes back into the discussion just purely because he's an 80-cap Socceroo, playing at right back, playing in the best team in Australia at the moment, doing well. And Van Marwijk would know him from his time in Holland as well. And he's experienced. And there was actually a funny point that we discussed during the Norway game with about how flat the fullbacks were. And I made the comment of, it's very Holger Osiek. Luke Wilshere opening up, receiving a pass off Lucas Neal and playing a long diagonal. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Luke Wilshere comes back into contention, considering what we've seen about Van Marwijk's style of play, and also considering Luke Wilshere on form. He's the best right fullback in the A-League. So he has to come into consideration. And then you also throw in his experience and the fact that Van Marwijk is willing to recall anyone who he thinks can do a job for him in the short term.
Very, very interesting plot line to come ahead. Look, we've got in that fringe just beyond Josh Brillante, of course, because he was in that 26. Mitch Langrack's the next cap off the rank in goalkeepers. No question about that. I don't think Alex Gersbach's hopes are dashed just yet. I think he absolutely make a run. There will be another centre-back. So, you know, can this bolter, Alexander Sunja, hope I've said that right, compete with Milos Stegenek, compete with Bailey Wright. There have to be four centre-back options to go. He is currently in that mix.
Yep, and again, he offers balance with that left-sided stopper.
And the other cusps are kind of looking in attacking. If we're going to see anything from left field, obviously there's a clamour for Arzani. That'd be a massive headline if that was there. Jamie McLaren, not great signs that he wasn't picked for this particular squad, but he's still in that next batch off the rank. We talk pure width. Brandon Barello is still in the picture. Van Marwijk was asked about him. He said at this point, him and Arzani are not ready. Doesn't mean they're not going to be ready in 6 weeks or 8 weeks when he has looked at what he's got and says, do I need anything more? So you can get the full list, of course, the top 50 and the explanation why, and jump in and have your say, of course, on the Fox Sports website, which we encourage you to do, and just get involved in the Socceroos conversation as we count down for the tournament we cannot wait for. But, Kate, just before we sign off, I mean, just impressions from that game. I mean, for me, I've come to terms with the fact that this is how we're going to play. It's what we're going to do. My frustration is that we're at this point going to another World Cup in between ideas and in between eras. And it's a shame that the momentum is not continuing and we can't build that into there. And what we're doing is kind of racing the clock. Your final thoughts on what you saw or took in from those two games?
Yeah, and obviously we still have the shadow of Postecoglou, and I hit the double digits of me mentioning his name in this podcast, David? But there will be that discussion if we go to Russia of what is the best way for us to have success on the international stage against the best teams in the world. But then there has to be a broader discussion about, it's not about what is the best way for one World Cup. It's about what is the best way for Australian football in the long term and also for growing the Australian game. And this is the question that I have yet to grapple, just asking it to myself internally. Of course, as a fan of the Socceroos, as an Australian football fan, I would love nothing more than to see the Socceroos go to Russia, pick up a result against France in the first game. And I genuinely think, doesn't matter about playing style, with the players that we have on offer, we can beat Peru and we can beat Denmark. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that we get through this group. We are a genuine chance at getting through the group. The question that I still can't answer is, if we get through the group by playing against France the way that we've seen him play against, or set his team out against Colombia, that means we go into a game against France before a ball is kicked and concede that the opposition is better than us and concede that the only way we can eke out a result and not even a win, even just a point or a respectable loss, is to go back to the wall and hand the opposition the initiative. So this is the discussion point that I think for a broader issue on Australian football about the long-term future of the game and where the national football curriculum stands and how does this fit in with youth development and our national identity and our national playing style. Is the Australian way to concede defeat before we step onto the field? Or is the best way for us in the long term to develop a national playing style to go there and have a go and to use the mantra that... I'm not going to use his name. Mm-hmm. But to use the mantra of the former coach to take the game to the opposition and to not take a backward step. There was something in that... There was something very raw in that, what he was able to hit on about what Australian sport was about. And it spoke to what Australian culture is about, even if it is a stereotype and a cliche. But there is something in the fact that us as Australians, it doesn't sit well for us to go and admit that there are people out there that are better and that we have to bow to them and accept that only luck and poor finishing from the Colombian striker will get us a result.
What about the alternative? Well said, by the way. What about the alternative that there is that last little grain of street smarts, the fact that France's pedigree of play, you look at the depth charts, they have players playing at the highest level. Yep. So there has to be that modicum of, I guess, rationality in approaching a game.
We approach it that they're better than us because they are better than us.
That's the other argument, and that what these will be would be the final pieces of the puzzle or the smart touches before we approach these. What I think is an argument for another podcast, not when you're 35, 40 minutes into a current one, and it certainly is another podcast, and it's one that Socceroos fans and football fans in Australia talk around coffee shops, we talk about around our desks continuously here, is the other issue of whether or not the way that Postecoglou had infused was going to go on to the World Cup or not. The fact that these players have been thrust with the complete opposite at short notice, and the fact that regardless of what the philosophy is, whether it's you have a crack at all costs, no fear, it's the inconsistency that leaves me confused. It might leave a young coach confused. It might leave others wondering where's that planning process going, because I have no issue with... I mean, Postecoglou left, so Football Federation Australia had to appoint a coach, choose a coach who can put the finishing touches on that and get us there, or go 360 in 3 months. We've got a couple of months now to see how that plays out.
Again, it's a question that we will be racking our brains until we see what happens on the field in June in Russia. And as I said, and everyone in Australia will be thinking the same thing, we all hope and wish that we have the best of success in Russia and that we get through the group and that we are wildly successful and that this discussion becomes null and void because we get through the group and happy days.
Winners are grinners. All right, well, Kate, thanks for your time. Pleasure as always. And look, well, there still will be plenty of Socceroos to talk about, but the next games are against the Czech Republic and Hungary, and that's down in June before the tournament. So we'll get a squad in May that there'll be players wearing green and gold all across the globe who will be anxiously waiting to hear. Hope you enjoyed that podcast. Thanks for your company again as always. And until next time, enjoy your football.